All right. Bonnie, welcome. Jeff, welcome as well. See, Austin's with us. Hello, my friend.
Hello.
All right. Stephanie is here. Hello, Stephanie. Hello. I was going to say Stephanie in the house, but now I'm all self-conscious now about what I say and do, because I just read an article yesterday about how if you still use the thumbs up emoji, apparently according to Gen Z, you're old, and that is a passive aggressive thing to do. So now I'm questioning everything. So now I'm thinking, well, if I say Austin in the house, is that like a 90s thing? You know, is that aging me? I don't know. I'm just withholding all slang right now temporarily, because I need to revisit what I do and say.
I'm learning from my teenagers, and I'm gonna suck at it, and that's just the facts.
Right? That's the wrong crowd to ask.
Right? They're like, no, that doesn't even mean that. The words do not have the same meaning at all.
Do they call you a boomer like mine call me?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I'm very outdated according to them, and I'm like, I'm fine with it. It's okay. I still know what I'm talking about. You don't.
Yeah. They'll come an age where they'll realize how cool and wise you are.
So I have to ask, do you ever have your kids look up the definition of the words that they use?
No.
I do, because they use words inaccurately. And so then I'll say, that doesn't go in that sentence.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And then they'll say, oh, it doesn't mean that anymore.
Okay. Yeah. So a friend of mine wrote this little book, The Gen Z Dictionary.
Oh, I'll have to look at this.
Kelly King. So this is actually pretty cool. So Kelly is the founder and principal of the 80/20 agency. So she's got a marketing agency, and talk about, you know, focus. So her target market, companies that market to Gen Z. And that is their specialty. Her whole team is Gen Z. She is in her 50s, like I am. And she's got this whole team of young people. And they came up with this. And I encouraged, I said, because she was selling it, I said, you don't sell this. You need to give this away. This is a beautiful lead magnet. And it is so well done. I mean, this is...
That's so cool.
20 something pages, you know.
And you can't buy it?
I think you can still buy it, but she wasn't making it available as a lead magnet for free. Homie Hopper.
I'm telling you, I need to look at this. Hot take.
Get it. It's a verb to get after it, to be excited.
Yes.
For example, Packers game is about to start. Let's get it.
Yes.
All new to me. This is might as well be Mandarin.
Doesn't it really depend on whether that's your target audience that you want to go after? I mean, if it's just your kids, it's fun to make them cringe at what you say, right? But if the way I do it with my kids is I say, you know what? You're already at a date. The next cohort is Gen Alpha. So, nah, 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 nah.
You're old.
Exactly. You're old to them.
Well, no. So, yeah, they're her agency, their target market are companies who are trying to market more effectively to Gen Z. So, it totally works.
Right.
But you're right. And it is kind of a little fun. I mean, it's about authenticity. Obviously, you can't just get this and insert some of these words in your marketing. People are going to see right through that. But she makes the point. I think it's very well done.
You know, so, what, Ed, I took a Web3 course on how to market for Web3 and understand all that Discord conversation and all that. And the first 4 weeks was learning the language.
Wow.
And the second you put something out, some little missive that misuses one of the words in their language, you're immediately labeled as an idiot. In their words, I can't even remember what their word for idiot was, but then you completely blackballed. You just like forget it. They don't want to talk to you. That's brutal.
We need a thesaurus to see what idiot would be in their world. Yeah,
exactly.
good stuff. All right. Good fun. Well, welcome back, everyone. And we are going to, you know what I'd like to do? I'd like to check in. We haven't done this. But I would love to know what your wins of the week have been in terms of this material. When I say win, I'm not talking about you landed a strategy engagement. Okay. If you did, great. But we're talking about, hey, you know, I'm staying on top of the material. That's a win. I'm getting new ideas. I had a breakthrough. I had an aha moment. I did the exercise. You know, I went through the class on Monday. Whatever it is, I want to start on a positive note. So if you wouldn't mind, just type in a capital W in the chat and just let us know, you know, where are you building momentum? Where are you? What do you feel good about? I just want to celebrate you. So don't be shy. Whatever comes to mind, just put it down. All right, we got, let's see, Stephanie says, I have a call next week and I'm doing a strategy engagement, but it is low hanging fruit and I'm feeling good about it. There you go. Somebody else let me know yesterday that she has a meeting tomorrow with a new potential client. And they came to her because they want her to write thought leadership articles for the founder. And I told her, listen, the thing you need to condition yourself to do is to not go in there straight with the attitude of, all right, cool. What do you need me to write? I want you to reprogram yourself, your thinking, and say, go into these meetings saying, great. So let's talk about what you're looking for. Tell me more about your business. Tell me more about how are you using content marketing? Are you writing these articles now? What's working? What's not working? Get into a discussion. I know for me, when I go in somewhere and I just know that I have to ask good questions, I feel so much more comfortable than when I think I have to pitch something, you know? So she's going into it. I don't know if, you know, how it's going to go, but it was really interesting. And this is someone I'm coaching out of this program, but I said, look, it's important that you go in there because they may not know exactly what they're doing or how to be effective with this. So maybe they do, but ask good questions. At a minimum, they'll appreciate it. Okay. So let's see. Sarah said, I'm doing strategy engagements and this is helping my confidence, but I'm not so good at scoping at the projects. I always find myself over delivering. I'm too much of a pleaser. Okay. And hey, we can absolutely talk about that, by the way. Charlotte says, my win, I've drafted my first juicy offer, working on creating trifecta of offers like the bundle Austin mentioned in this week's class. Perfect. Jeff says, I picked up my flavor, writing my juicy offer, picking my 10 advice giving contacts. Excellent. Vicky says, I visualize a portfolio of offerings to meet needs of small companies for their pre-launch activities, which can be tailored depending on how much marketing capability they have. Mm-hmm. I've started to build a sales deck or PDF for the easiest. There you go. A baby steps, guys. We're just trying to make progress, right? Work with whatever confidence you have to keep moving forward and then pushing yourself beyond that. Austin, I feel like I just completely monopolize this call. I'm going to turn it over to you, man. I'm sorry.
You all are much more accommodating to Gen Z than I am. Maybe it's because I'm an older millennial, but I don't give a crap. Like people who lack basic life skills, you know, they're still living on their parents' dime. I'm like, you don't get to tell me how to talk. And if you think that my thumbs up and my punctuation in text messages is passive aggressive, well, then call me. What's passive aggressive is not actually taking confrontation by the horns. So thank you. Right. You all are very nice, very accommodating. And I'm like, my, I just came out actually from one of my clients is in town, a longtime strategy client, and was facilitating a session with a bunch of 20 somethings. And it was just funny because I was like, everybody needs to put their laptops away, turn their phones over. This is not a multitasking. I'm like the old man in the room now. So y'all are just much nicer than I am, I think, in terms of.
Well, you know what, Austin? On the real, you're right on with this, man. On the real, it means emphasizes an honest statement.
I had no clue what you're talking about. On the real. So I'm out of touch. I want to go back to something Sarah said, and then let's definitely, you know, answer questions that you all have. She talked about over-delivering and being too much of a pleaser. Sarah, I still do this. And part of it is it's still hard for me to turn off the implementer and just be the idea guy. But I don't think it's such a bad idea to over-deliver, especially early on when you're getting success stories, you're getting those case studies, you know, we still like referrals, right? Even if you get more proactive with your marketing, it's still a very good thing to leave people really happy. So I have found that there's one question that helps me manage my anxiety around not over-delivering, and that is anyone complaining, right? I find that I have in my head the ideal of what I could have delivered knowing my capabilities, but that ideal is often tied to a finite amount of time the client probably didn't pay for. And maybe I can't even fit that into the rest of my schedule. And so I'm comparing what I'm about to deliver to that ideal rather than to what I actually agreed to. And when I compare what I'm about to deliver to what I actually agreed to, I'm often still over delivering, even if in my mind it's like a B minus rather than an A plus, right? Like, I'll deliver a road mapping report or like a content roadmap with 24 topics or whatever. And I'm thinking it would have been pretty easy for me to actually deliver more like 40 topics to them, even with just another 30 to 60 minutes, but they're not complaining, right? And it's like, I'm not getting paid for that. And so it's, I can't give you any like really good advice except to say, go back to what you committed to deliver and compare the report or whatever you're about to send over to that rather than everything else that you know you could do if time wasn't a factor, if budget wasn't a factor, right? So maybe that helps, but just so you know, I still struggle with this. I want my clients to be happy. For sure. Yeah.
So the project I'm doing at the moment is everything always comes in with like, it always comes with, we need a bit of help with the copywriting, as you said. And then it's not, they don't need help with the copywriting. They, once you sort of dig underneath that, they need masses of help. So a company I'm working for at the moment is a professional service firm who came to me saying that. And then I looked at it and said, no, we're going to have to do some brand strategy work, some act sharpening, etc. So I interviewed the partners of this firm to pull together a brand strategy. So I've delivered them a document which really kind of feeds back to them, their feedback to me about their company, where it's going and sort of in its competitive landscape, etc., and everything that they see as the differentials. And then I've produced them like a brand strategy recommendation report all about differential, but I always take it too far. So like for this company, I've I just give them, I just end up, I can't stop myself. I just give them much too much. Like I've even designed them a sample homepage in Squarespace. I've given them ideas for blog and content marketing and, you know, all this sort of thing. They don't know the difference. You know, they, when they took me on, I'm offering them brand strategy. They don't know what brand strategy is. And I did, right. I kind of did the same thing with the last company I worked with, which was a digital therapeutics company. And I just ended up giving them loads and loads. And I just need to know how to stop and how to delineate, you know, to get to a point where, say, I've given you this. Now, would you like me to do this rather than just giving it to them kind of thing?
So one, and we've talked about this, I think, in one of the past sessions, but I use teaching visuals or client education visuals. So I'll have like the complete package for brand strategy, which can have a bunch of, like a brand can have a bunch of different parts. And sometimes they don't have money within a brand sprint like that I'll charge $3,000 for. They may not have money for the whole package, right? But I'll still show them everything that I could do for them and then say, but maybe with you, what we'll do is get started with these five pieces. I'll do stakeholder interviews. What I'll do is I'll turn that into like a pretty basic brand strategy for you. I'll deliver a report with some recommendations, right? So then you could even color code it in a way that like everything in blue is your basic package. Everything that's purple is like, oh, that includes blue. And then, but this is the middle size package. And then the big package is everything included here.
Right? Yeah. Okay. So you're sort of silver, bronze, and gold. Yeah, that sounds good in like a perfect world. But I often find that when you take on one of these kind of engagements, you don't know exactly where it's going to go and quite what's going to be needed. Do you know what I mean?
It's a good point.
That's great if you've got that. Maybe it's just that I'm inexperienced at these, but I don't always have the foresight to see what's coming up. So.
Well, yeah. Here's one other thing that has helped me, right? Because even when you're walking in blind to some of these relationships, I don't always know what pieces of the brand are extant, like they already exist and in a fairly useful form. And so I have, and we've talked about this in the past, but I have an intake questionnaire and also onboarding questionnaire. Intake is before I know them and money hasn't traded hands. Onboarding is they've signed up. They definitely want to do something with me. I'm trying to get situational awareness in terms of what pieces do exist and what is their relative degree of confidence in those pieces. And so actually was working on this yesterday. So let me just get you. So one part of the onboarding questionnaire is I just ask them to choose from a menu what they already have that they're confident in. And sorry, I'm having to edit this so I can actually put it into the chat, but this helps me, first of all, understand what I should focus on during a brand sprint, because I can prioritize things that I think are ultimately more important for them. But it serves that dual purpose of educating them too, so they know, oh, wow, there are a whole bunch of other things that we can do with Austin if we're willing to pay more money. So sorry, this didn't come through as a bullet point list, but this is what's in my onboarding questionnaire, right? Pick anything in this list that you already have and are confident in. And then obviously when they submit the form, I review the form and I'm like, okay, cool. They've already got a company vision and mission. that they're fairly satisfied with, I'm not going to spend any time on that. I might look at it and think, wow, that could really use some wordsmithing, but I'm just going to set aside my own preferences in the initial engagement, where the whole point is to build trust so that I then can sell a follow-on engagement, ideally that will be much bigger. I need to focus on the handful of deliverables from a strategy session that will be most impactful and most helpful for building trust. So I think in your case, maybe just spending a little bit more time around sales strategy.
Yeah.
Like, how do I want to onboard a new brand strategy client? And also, I don't want to give away the farm in the first engagement, because the things that I would include extra for free are very valuable.
Yeah.
And even in your report for like the first installment of brand strategy, in your report, one of your recommendations could be, now if you see the value in continuing, here are the next 5 to 8 things that I think we should add to continue building out your brand strategy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right. And that's what I'll do too. Like, some of my clients, they simply don't have enough money to hire me out of the gate for a complete brand strategy package. So I'll make it more modular. I'll give them this piece or these 5 pieces. They find some more money. I'll help them with some more pieces. They find some more money. Now maybe we're doing a brand management subscription or a brand strategy subscription, some sort of business strategy subscription. So I've had good success selling follow-on engagements, especially when I can show them a kind of map of, in my mind, when you have a complete, well-defined brand, it's going to have all these pieces. If you mm-hmm. can't afford to have them all right now, that's okay. But this is the ideal, like you said it well, it's ideal. Yes, Austin, it's ideal. But I found it helpful to show my clients, here's what the ideal is, so that they can even start to plan for it with budgeting and that sort of thing. Okay, that was very verbose. I'm sorry.
Thanks, that was helpful. Yeah.
Good. Okay. Other questions?
One thing I wanted to mention is that when we post these replays, keep in mind that there's also a record of the chat. So if you want to go back and capture this, it'll always be there. I wanted to mention that Carmen says her win, I've nailed down my strategy, marketing strategy, and I'm working out my offers. It's going to be a bundle, a sort of continuum as the client needs it. Great. And then her second tier is to offer email marketing and lead generation systems, with third being retainer for email content marketing on a 90-day contract. Look at this, man. You're moving right along, Carmen.
So good, Carmen.
Yeah. Charlotte says, I'm loving this modular approach in making the bundle into a subscription. Yeah. It's one thing we haven't really talked too much about is kind of the subscription element of future offers, you know, or potentially even at the beginning, is that component of being there to kind of help manage, help support, a client. Mm-hmm. Vicky has a question. If your lead is a cold call, would you attach a sales deck /PDF to the initial email reaching out to the prospective client, or just keep it simple with a few bullets in the email and attach a sales material in the second email if they respond favorably? Great question.
So the way I handle it, Vicky, is my first call is always like what I would call like a pure discovery call. Even if they get in touch with me and they do seem to already have some clarity around what they need, I'll still go back and ask really broad, open-ended questions like, okay, so why are we here? You know, was there a triggering event that made you want to reach out to me? And I'll really do that consultative sort of hoping to spiral into what they really need. And there have been calls where at the end of the call, I'm like, you don't need to hire me for anything. That being said, if by the end of the call, I really do see an opportunity for me to serve this client, I do three things. Number one, I have found it very effective to book the follow-up call at the end of the discovery call in the last 5 minutes, typically a week out. And I'll just say, hey, do you have your calendar open right now? I think it makes sense for us to go ahead and book a follow-up call. And then I've never had someone say, no, I'm not comfortable with that. So we go ahead and book a follow-up call. Like I said, typically a week out. And then in the interim, so like after I kind of, we hang up the phone, hang up the Zoom, then I will send a follow-up email. And my follow-up emails always have the same format. Hey, thanks for your time today. Here's a summary or recap of what I've heard. Then I just lay out the bullet points that are my notes from the call. So I'm repeating verbatim back to them what they said they needed. And then after I finish the bullet point list, I'll say something along the lines of, is that accurate? Did I leave out anything important? And then after that is when I'll say, I have a perfect offer for your situation. Check out the deck attached. So in my follow-up email, actually, I think I'll just show you one of these if that's okay. So you can, if you really want to.
So Austin, while you're doing that, just to recap up to this point, you were always willing to have a quick 20, 30 minute initial discovery call conversation with someone who seems to potentially be a fit. That's right. Take some notes, right? You have a good conversation, no pressure on either side. If you see an opportunity, you then invite them to a follow-up call.
Mm-hmm.
In that follow-up call, you dig a little bit deeper and then you follow it up at the end of that call with the email you just described.
That's right. And, you know, I never go into a call assuming that someone should hire me. And that is even if they're a referral and they say, hey, we want new website copy, or we want this, or we want that. Again, I've just had too many experiences where they have this initial request. I even sell them, like I'm able to close that project with them. And then we get halfway through that project and I'm like, why are we working on website copy if you don't even know what your brand is? So I've just kind of learned I actually need to pump the brakes, even if they seem to have some clarity, and then ask more questions. And I know I've dropped these into the chat before, but when I show up to a call, I have the goal of answering these questions during the discovery call. So this is what's my ammunition, so to speak. When I send the recap email after the discovery call, I have answered these questions for myself. Now I'm actually regurgitating that back to them. I'm just a professional parrot, right? I'm not selling them. I'm letting them sell themselves by repeating back to them what they said. But let me show you this email real quick. So this is a local business. They were a referral. I was able to meet with her in person for the discovery meeting because she's local. And then this is the summary of what I've heard. You know, and I know this seems like super basic, but I found it so effective. Like, I don't even try to translate what they said. I'm just repeating exactly back, right? And then in this case, I didn't actually, because the PDF is quite large, I just linked out to it. And so this goes to my 1-day brand sprint offer deck. So I attached that deck because at the end of the meeting, it was pretty clear to me she didn't need project road mapping. She didn't need content road mapping. The strategy offer that she needed was actually the one-day brand sprint. So that's another reason to be more open-ended during a discovery call. Even if you want to sell strategy first, one strategy may offer may be better suited to this client than another. And you don't know how you're going to best meet their needs until you figure it out. Like, what do they really need, right? And so this is how I structure my sales process. It's super basic, and I've found it to be very effective. And then they ultimately bought the one-day brand sprint. We actually did the kickoff call yesterday. So,
hey, Austin, real quick, with the when, if after the discovery call you realize that you know exactly what they need, do you go ahead and tip, you know, instead of scheduling a follow-up call, do you go ahead and send out an email like this?
Great question. In this case, I did, because
that's what it sounded like.
I already knew, like, if the original call or the initial call is like diagnostic, let's get to the root of your problem, right? If I'm kind of like the doctor, and after the initial consultation, I'm like, wow, this sounds an awful lot. It looks like pneumonia. It sounds like pneumonia. Hey, we did a lab test. It's pneumonia, right? So I already knew, oh, you're trying to move forward with certain creative projects, but you don't have a well-defined brand. Let's do the one-day brand sprint first. And it made sense to her. She talked to her partner. They ultimately came back and said, yes, we're ready to move forward with this. So it is really a case-by-case basis whether you send the recap email and you don't even propose working together. You send the recap email and you attach a sales deck because you already know what they need. Or you send the recap email and you know, yeah, like, I'm going to put together more of a custom version of a strategy offer I have. That can make sense sometimes too. They're like, oh, they need like 3/4 of a day of brand strategy. And then in the last 90 minutes needs to just be sort of like a copywriting intensive. So I try not to like overcomplicate things for you all when I'm like just teaching about how to sell strategy, but I still do sell hybrid offers where it's like a little bit of strategy that culminates in, oh, great. By the time you leave this session, you're going to have the script that you need for the new explainer video on your homepage. Right. So like, don't be afraid to combine a little bit of strategy and a little bit of implementation, especially if it's just in a day, it's in a single session. Right. Hopefully that clarifies things instead of muddying the water.
Yeah. I just want to ask, so what I'm hearing is if most of my clients for this type of product are not going to be from my existing client base. So I'm going to be doing a lot of reaching out, like cold calls. So I don't know these people from Adam. They don't know me. So from what I hear is I should formulate my initial reach out as more of a general offering, like maybe give a few examples. I've noticed, you know, maybe you need help with your website content or strategy or your strategizing your pre-launch activities, because you probably don't. Most of these companies won't have a marketing department at all. They'll be lucky if there's even a marketing person working there. And sort of like use more general language in that initial email to get the interest, to get the call. Mm-hmm. And that's when I move into following the steps that you just outlined.
That's right. And I mean, there are whole courses that you could take on the best way to do cold email outreach if you're prospecting, right? So there are definitely going to be best practices to follow with cold email outreach. And I've got, Ed, will you remind me? I'm happy to share out some of the resources that I typically recommend, including some email templates that I've just collected along the way. I'm kind of a pack rat when it comes to information. and I'm sure all the Gen Zers wouldn't even know what a pack rat is. Anyway, so I'm happy to share that around. But whether you're selling implementation in the form of copywriting or you're selling strategy in the form of like planning, yeah, the goal with cold email outreach is just get on the first call and see if there's good chemistry there and do the diagnostic work, get to the root of the problem. And sometimes I'm like, oh, you need a Shopify developer. That's not me. Let me get into my Rolodex. Again, Gen Zers would have no idea what a Rolodex is. and I'll try to find some names of people I trust, right? So I said this on the last call. I have a concierge mindset and maybe to some degree abundance mindset too, that I don't have to find an opportunity to sell into in every discovery call. I truly am here to bring clarity, help them actually come to some kind of decision point. And it's okay if that decision doesn't even involve me. It involves hiring a Shopify developer, right? And that has just worked very well over 13 years of freelancing of there's going to be enough for me. I don't have to find an angle, a sales angle with every single person I talk to. I really am just interested in helping them solve their problems. And sometimes solving their problems involves hiring me too.
So let me present it a slightly different way. If you're going to do cold emails, and by the way, many of you guys know, like I've been teaching cold email prospect or call it warm email prospecting for 11 years now. The approach you want to take first, the goal with a cold email is just to spark conversation. That is it. We sometimes forget that it's not to sell, it's not to land a client, it's just to spark dialogue or conversation. So the cold email needs to be short, very relevant and personalized. And the whole idea is to get that person to say, interesting, do you do this? You know, we might be interested in talking to you about X or whatever. Once they respond, you can then take it to the next step. Okay, that may involve a couple of questions back and forth, but the goal at that point, once they respond, is to go to the next room, which is a Zoom call or a conversation. Okay, so, and from there, that's, you know, we can talk about that later. But if you think about that, then if that's the goal is to spark dialogue, the warm email just needs to be, hey, Bill, love what you're doing in this area. In fact, that's why I'm reaching out. I'm a copywriter who works with fintech companies to help them develop smart and effective high converting email campaigns. Not sure how you're handling that right now, but curious what it would take to be considered. Would you be open to connecting? Ed. Okay. Something very simple. What is that intended to do? Just to get a response, to spark dialogue. If they respond positively, or at least with a little bit of curiosity, then it's the next goal. Let's try to qualify a little bit, pre-qualify over email, and then try to get to a Zoom call. In the Zoom call, that is a discovery call Austin has been talking about, where you ask it questions. He's got the questions here in the chat. And then you decide, you know. One good way of doing it is maybe don't pitch strategy or don't present strategy in your warm email. Just talk about what you help your target market do, generally speaking. And then in the conversation, if you get to that point, then you can see, is there an opportunity for me? Because maybe they were attracted to the fact that you do email campaigns. So they're thinking, great, we need some email campaigns. Can you write them for us? As you ask questions, you realize, hey, they need more than just like they don't really know exactly what they need in this category. I see that based on what they shared with me, they really need to map out this lead gen or lead conversion strategy first, yeah. Right? And that's when you can offer, hey, yeah, I can help you with this, but I really feel the best way I can serve you right now is helping you map this out. Because otherwise, we're going to be spending a lot of money on things that may or may not work. So that's kind of the approach I would take, which Austin is It's what you said. You don't go mm-hmm. in with an agenda. You go in trying to learn. But going back to Vicky's question, that's how I would handle the cold approach. Does that make sense, Vicky?
Yeah, it makes total sense. And I just had an aha moment because it's like, I was just like, I'm jumping the gun to just go in and hard sell this strategy.
No.
Compartmentalizing strategy with content and deliverables or, you know, slide decks and stuff. But that makes total sense. It's like, it's sort of like, just for the analogy, I just adopted a rescue dog who has some anxiety issues adjusting to New York City. And it's step by step. It's little by little. It's like the initial email. I get it. The initial email is just to get them interested, find out what they want, what, you know, thank you. Because I was totally jumping in there with like, here, I can do this strategy. It's like, yeah. I was getting nowhere with that, right?
Well, and I think it's worth noting that as with any other marketing strategy, if you break it up into its phases, you're going to do some split testing and think like a scientist at each phase. And so even with cold outreach emails, you know, you might use an email track, like you might track opens, because then you're like, oh, this subject line was just a little bit more effective at just even helping people open the email. And then, oh, like my initial thought was, if I sent a longer, much more personalized email, then that would get a higher response rate, but maybe it is really short, really punchy, right? And so you think, what is my goal at each stage? Oh, goal number one is to just start a conversation. It's not even to get on a call. It's just start a conversation. And then the next phase is, how do I move someone from an email thread or LinkedIn private message to a call? And then on the call, like, so you're going to know what problem you're solving for at each stage, and then know what you're going to measure and optimize. I just typically do it in a G sheet, and I'm like, cool. Eventually you find out this subject line, this content, and this call to action, that these three are the most effective for just getting a reply, any reply from a founder at a startup. And then you move from there. And eventually, if you kind of work your way out to the back and you've even sold something, awesome. Now you can scale it up. I know how many emails I'd need to send out to get this number of clients. Right.
I wanted to share something. I know we're going to move on, I promise, but this might also help. Think of this process having three phases and then several steps, specifically six steps. First phase is this first row you see here. That's sales and marketing. First, you got to get interest. Again, we're trying to spark dialogue. That's what a warm, cold email, whatever you want to call it, is about. The whole point is to spark conversation. And then to stay top of mind, meaning to follow up, like if they haven't responded or they do respond and you're trying to get to the next stage, which is that Zoom call, for example. Okay, from there, now we're getting into the onboarding and work delivery phase, which is the next phase. Land the client, onboard the client, get them going, deliver the work. And then after that is the third phase, which is repeat business. Go deeper with that client. Look for other opportunities where you can help them. Austin's talked a lot about that today. And try to get referrals for other people they might know who could be helped by your services. So again, if you kind of compartmentalize your business like this, put it in different boxes, I think it makes things so much easier because you don't get caught up in the, oh, I got to sell them this. No, no, no. Where are we right now? They don't even know I exist. Let me see if I can pique their interest. And then let me see if I can spark a real productive conversation and then stay top of mind and continue to follow up until they're ready to become a client. That's the next phase. So just another way of thinking about it. Okay, cool. We got a question here from Jeff. Can you provide us with links or documents of your juicy offers? The worksheet is useful, but seeing your final result would be helpful. So the offer copy itself or the deck or an actual PDF that you might send out, Jeff? Is that what you're looking for?
Yes, sorry, we're on the wrong screen. Austin beat you to it. He's quick on the draw. He already sent a link in the chat and I've opened it up. It looks great. Thank you, Austin. That'll be helpful.
Ah,
trust me, I'm not here to plagiarize. None of us are. We just would like to see some guidance in how to apply the worksheet.
I truly don't care. I mean, you can take that and use it as a template, put it in your own voice. You know, it's just funny how our clients ultimately want to buy from us as much as they want to buy a specific offer or service. And that's especially true if you're a solopreneur, solo consultant, right? They're not buying based on my reputation. They like the way I showed up in the discovery call, you know, and the same could be said, you know, you all could try to sell one of my clients the exact same thing I had just sold them, but it would be different for you. And same goes for your clients. I could not sell some of your clients effectively. I wouldn't have the right presence, the right personality, you know? All right. Is that the end of our questions for now?
Oh, I know there's got to be more questions. You know what? While we're waiting, I'm going to also show again, and you know, the whole idea with these is you don't want to copy what somebody else has done. Use it as an example, you know, as an inspiration so you can see how you can structure your offers. I wanted to show, I helped a coaching client of mine create a couple of different strategy offers recently. Here's one of them. So she created this content amplifier workshop. Again, she gave it a name, you know, that's one of the keys. And you could see it here from, you know, she sets the stage. The most successful content strategy, the most successful companies have successful content strategy behind them. But the problem is so many companies really don't know. They're too busy. They don't take time to stop and assess. That's where I can help. I've been a content creator. So here's the proof. She gave it a name. Content Amplifier Workshop is designed to give you real clarity. I'll also help you ideate more purposeful content. Here are the benefits. With a clear content strategy, you won't get these things. So this speaks to risk of not doing something about this. The process, this is how it's going to work. My fee, again, look at Austin's juicy offer points, you know, the key points or elements of a juicy offer. They're all represented here. Outcomes, you'll walk away from this workshop with at least one big aha moment or breakthrough, as well as clarity of direction, confidence in your content strategy, an actionable plan, yada, yada, yada. Okay. And then a little bit more proof. These are just footnotes to some of the stats she used a little bit earlier.
I want to mint, like, would you scroll back down to those numbers for a second?
Yeah.
I think it's really helpful when you're putting together offers to have some proof of path. That's the first type that I mentioned in the Juicy Offers worksheet. And this can be really helpful if you've never actually sold a type of strategy before, but you're trying to make, build a case that the outcome that you are selling is effective for helping your target audience achieve certain things. And so what I really love about this right here is you don't have to say, oh, and I would, you know, SaaS companies that prioritize content marketing efforts see much higher growth rates than those that don't. It doesn't matter whether or not you were the strategist who helped those companies in the study. All you're trying to do is say, here's why what I'm selling is valid, and here's why other companies who are smart are investing in this thing that I'm trying to sell you right now. And they're like, oh, like if I don't buy this, it's like getting left behind in a way, right? So if you feel like you're kind of thin on proof in terms of being able to point at your portfolio at very similar projects, just find outside industry sources and studies and statistics that say, oh, companies that do this are more likely to win. And that's why I really recommend that type of proof. Anyway, great example, Ed.
Yeah. She did a really good job with that. I think Deb had a question. Hey, Deb.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
This is not a question, but I just found out from my experience that a lot of companies don't have time to follow trends. So especially even in articles that I'm writing, if you can find trends for them, like the number stats that we just saw, companies love that. So if you can include that in everything that you do, I think it would be really to everyone's advantage. So I just wanted to share that.
Very good point.
There's a client of mine, coaching client, and she was needing help with her offers. And one of the things that she's really good at is just following trends. And she was joking, I think she's in her 50s. She was joking that TikTok is like her superpower, because that's a place that she's able to pick up on trends, because it's sort of on the bleeding edge of stuff right now, right? But anyway, your point, Deb, she rolled out a new service. I think we called it like idea sleuthing. That was the name that she gave it. But it seems crazy that you could find people who would pay you to just go find good content ideas for them. But those people are out there. And if you enjoy the research, if you enjoy poking around on Reddit and subreddits and being able to find like, oh, why are people talking about this right now? That's interesting. If you've got like a good nose for ideas, so to speak, build an offer around that. Hey, I'll send you 5 ideas a month. I'm trying to remember what it was with Kelly. It was something like, you know, you don't know what to write about? Fine. I'm going to send you however many ideas per month, and they're already going to be documented and researched, and I might even make a recommendation. This one needs to be long form. This one needs to be a listicle. This one needs to be sort of, you know, a strategy breakdown, right? But we overestimate how sophisticated some companies are with content. A lot of them are very last minute, right? And a lot of them are creating a lot of crappy content. So that's why this is a blue ocean opportunity. There are many, many more companies doing a pathetic job than there are companies doing a really good job. Let's see. Stephanie, were you talking about the lamplighter example that let's see.
Or even here, something like that. It just, for me, I'm a visual person, so it kind of sparks where I want to go. That makes sense.
There. Don't plagiarize, Stephanie. I saw that glint in your eye. I saw intent to plagiarize. Now, I taught high school English for a year right after my undergrad, and it was so funny how seriously, we took plagiarism, and these days online, it's like people have no shame. In term, there was a LinkedIn post that it was plagiarized word for word, and it got like 60,000 likes.
Really?
And there were definitely people in the comments calling it out. But anyway, let's talk about that another time, right? Okay, so Jeff said regarding proof. If I state real results I've got with strategic planning leading to impressive sales increases, will it sound like bragging or will it be persuasive? Don't worry about bragging. Like, in your offer is exactly where you should brag. And you can frame it with, you know, you can use some hedging language to say like, you know, like the reason I sell this offer is because I've had a lot of success delivering these outcomes. And then you can just have like a short blurb. And if you've got a long form narrative case study elsewhere, you can go ahead and link out to those case studies within your offer, right? If you then have, if you can get a testimonial from that client and within your offer have sort of tiny success story and then the quote from the client and then tiny success story and then quote from, I mean, layer in the proof.
Okay. Right? So this is just a little bit different because for the last 10 years, I've gotten into copywriting big time now, but I made my own strategy. Like I worked for companies for 2 or 3 years and got poached to go to another one because I raised sales 140% or 78% or, you know, whatever. So I did it by applying these principles that you're talking about, getting a strategy, figuring out the right, you know, way to go to market. What is the brand that we're trying to sell? Staying focused, blah, blah, blah. But I did it. Like, I mean, it was actually companies I work for and I got those mm-hmm. results. So I, it'd be like me doing a case study on myself. Like, it's kind of weird. Like, so I've tried to sort of back away from that just because it sounds like a bunch of chest beating.
I think that it's just one small nuance, which is like the strategies that I have developed, you know, you don't even have to name the company. You're just like, you know, a bank or a tech startup or whatever. You're just like, if you're the one who, you know, developed the strategy and then implemented it, it's still very relevant proof, right? Here are some of the results that have come from strategies that I developed. 140% okay. increase at financial services company, 127, and the odder the number, the better, right? So yeah. Not like 140, but if you could get like 142, you know, but that's awesome. I mean, if you've got those numbers, like by all means, put them in. That's kind of the holy grail as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. Okay. Thanks. I'll have to watch this recording again to get your wording because you, that sounded really good.
I have another example and I'll put the Dropbox link to this as well. This is not meant to be any kind of advertising and this thing is consistently evolving. So, but I wanted to show it to you guys. So this is, I took what I learned from Austin and I created a different kind of coaching offer. It's a breakthrough engagement. I think I mentioned this last time. And so I'm just going to touch on a few things. And again, I'll include a link to it if you want to read it. So this would be if somebody inquires or if I hear something from a potential client where I think they would be best served through something like this. It's a strategy engagement presented as a coaching offer. Okay. Sometimes, by the way, that's one of the flavors, right? So basically, I start by stating the problem. I've noticed that many people in my tribe have a very specific problem they're trying to solve. And, you know, maybe it's this or maybe it's that. Whatever your biggest goal or challenge, I bet that it really boils down to you want a breakthrough and you lack a key ingredient, which is clarity. Clarity to understand this, clarity to see what steps to take. That's where I'd like to give you a combination of clarity, perspective, and a simple step-by-step actionable plan. So here's how it works. Steps 1 through 4, you'll walk away with, again, outcomes, clarity, confidence, actionable plan, much needed traction and momentum. Again, we're not trying to solve world hunger here. Okay, we want to focus on a challenge that if solved mm-hmm. would translate into at least 10x payback on your investment. I got proof through a few testimonials, so the few that I have done. The fee is X. Here are the terms. For right now, I just need to know if you'd like to book your engagement. I'll get you all the details. Just hit reply to the email I sent you, say I'm in, and I'll take it from there. I remove all the friction from the process mm-hmm. by saying, look, you don't have to fill it. Just like reply and hit I'm in. And then baby steps, like Vicky was saying, right? It's like, I just want them to take that step, make that verbal commitment, and then I can send them the order form. Would love to work with you. Just let me know. We can get started right away. Then a PS, just reminding them why this is important. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I'll link to this, but just another, since you guys are looking for more examples, that's another one of a different flavor.
And everyone is like, oh, I actually want to go book one of these with Ed immediately.
Yeah.
it's really good. And one of the things that I like about it and I think is a good copywriting strategy. If you feel yourself getting hung up on the verbiage, write it like a letter, write it like an email, make it more conversational, because it's really easy. Even when you're like someone like me gives you a juicy offers worksheet, the language can become kind of stilted and stale pretty fast. So if you find yourself getting tripped up, follow Ed's example and just make it a lot more conversational, right? I don't think you have to sell this nearly as hard as you think. Most people who lack strategy are very aware that they're turned around, and then you come in and you're like, hey, let's get you a breakthrough. And they're like, that sounds wonderful.
But I do like doing what you do, which is you have a conversation, you assess, you determine if and how you can help them. And then you say, I've got something that I think will really help you. Let me put it together for you. I'm going to email it to you within the next hour. I prefer sending it over email and having them review it behind closed doors than I do pitching it right there in front of them for a number of reasons. By the way, I've tried both approaches. And there has been one approach where the person was just, they were just so hot and already so sold that I sent them this, but I went ahead and I gave them some of the details verbally. But most of the time I'm sending it like you do. Instead of in a deck, I usually do something really plain and boring, like what you just saw.
Yeah, I have not seen any big jump in conversion if I have a really high design value with a deck versus a Google Doc. Like, I think we think that all these things have to be true in order to sell something. But in fact, if they have the problem and you have the remedy, and then you're just in conversational language, say, here's what it is, the offers can start to sell themselves.
Yeah. Especially this approach would be really great for a clarity session. You know, you don't have to call it that, but that flavor. Hey, here's what I got. You know, if it sounds like you're missing one key ingredient, clarity. That's what we do. Here's how it works. Here's what you're going to get out of it. Here's what it costs. Here's the next step. Stephanie says, I have clients in the B2C world and B2B world. Do you think the way you present this has to be different? It's a great question. Well, I'll share my thoughts on that, because I'm kind of dealing with same thing, two different audiences. It does, to the extent that you may not communicate with in a B2B setting the same way you might be in a B2B setting. Okay. So notice the approach that I just shared with you would work better in a B2C or kind of in an entrepreneurial solo business kind of interaction. If this was a software company, you know, a $100 million software company, I wouldn't approach it this way. You know, I would have something a little bit more buttoned up, professional, much better looking, awesome, kind of like the deck approach you take, something along those lines. So a lot of it is visual and branding, and then some of it will be language as well that won't be quite as informal in terms of the copy.
And I'll say, and I kind of mentioned this in session 4, so for those of you who've already been through it, I try to just parrot back the language that they use as much as I can, right? And it may sometimes make sense if you capture that language in your notes before you send over your strategy offer. Go and tweak the language in the strategy offer to make it mirror their language more closely. It's worth the time, I promise you, right? And then, I was going to say one other thing. Do you think the way you present this has to be different? And I've also, from time to time, when I send something like a strategy offer, I will actually record a Loom video where I just talk, I narrate myself going through the offer for them, right? And I really do think that people connect with faces and voices. That's why we watch videos and listen to podcasts and then feel like we know the podcast host. So depending on what your relationship is with the person that you think may be interested in the strategy offer, let's say, especially if this person is an existing client and you're going to sell them a strategy offer they haven't heard about before, make them a video. It could be 3 minutes long, right? And so if you aren't using Loom, there's Dub, D-U-B-B, Loom, BombBomb. There are lots of these video messaging services, right? But anyway,
and you could do it. Do the video while you're going through a deck even. Mm-hmm. Right. And Loom shows you your headshot there in the corner and then the screen with your slides.
And so if I especially like that, if you're using a deck where the language is a little bit more formal and maybe you're trying to match B2B or a more corporate client. And so a really nice sort of 1-2 punch is when you have the more formal language in the deck. But then in a very conversational way, you then explain the deck to them, right? And another nice thing about that is depending on the client, if you know that they have to share it around to get approval, and the people that are going to be involved with the decision-making weren't on the call and don't know who you are and have no sense of your personality, and there's going to be a disconnect. Oh, we built all this rapport. But now all these other people in the organization, all they're going to see is a pretty sterile deck. That video can just bring some continuity and make sure your personality comes through. Tone of voice, you know, a lot of us still read all those invisible signals with body language and be like, oh, this person is trustworthy, right? Here's one more before we move on. I know Deb has a question. I do sell one-off clarity sessions. And the language that I use is really, really basic, really basic. Like the only offer is I'm going to help you get clarity. That's it. Do you have a problem? Great. I'll help you approach it from a new angle. So just steal this language, make it your own. This is especially helpful. These clarity sessions, when I have someone who's like, hey, can I pick your brain? And I'm like, my brain has been picked bloody. I don't want anyone else picking my brain. You keep your fingers away from my brain. And I'm like, yes, I'm happy to help you with this. Here's how you can book a brain picking session with me, right? Anyway, Deb, what's up?
Actually, which brings up another question. So the clarity, you're not specifying what the clarity relates to. It's just a general clarity session, right?
Yes, I bet I have done 60 of these.
Wow.
And I was first booking them through a site called Clarity FM. That's probably how I got Clarity Call. Let me grab my profile link.
I just picked somebody's brain at clarity.fm a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah. You can set, hey, your hour, actually it's per minute, your per minute rate. This guy ended up being $500 an hour. I booked half an hour just to say, you know, all right, let's see. Cause I don't know how much we'll need. And it ended up being about what we needed. I may need book a 15-minute call with some additional follow-up questions, but yeah, it's all done through this app.
Wow. That's cool.
This has been really nice for people who are, they're kind of loose connections. They're people who they already know me. They have my contact information, but they're also people that I don't really owe them any favors. And sometimes when they ask for favors, it makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable because I'm like, we don't even know each other that well. Like there's this one guy in particular, Jason. He basically wanted to know all of the freelancers that I used for different things. Hey, who's your designer? Who's this? Who's that? But he framed it like, I'd love to hear about your creative ops. Could I pick your brain on creative ops? And I'm like, dude, I know what this is, you know? So I'm like, oh, I'm happy to consult with you. Here's a link where you can book a time that works for you. And it's a really nice sort of diversionary tactic, because I'm like, no, I'm not just going to do all of your freelance research for you because we had coffee once 5 years ago, right? I'm sounding really cantankerous. Maybe I'm feeling cantankerous today, but anyway. But yeah, I've found this a really nice way to just politely divert people who want free consulting.
Oh, I have one more question. Because I'm not exactly sure which of these I'm going to use, but what do I do about my website? Because I have like thought leadership and stuff on there, but do I need to, because it's going to take time if I jump on the website and have to, you know, put a brand strategy or something like that on there. Can we get by starting this without having our website as a reference? Because I have a full-blown website for content and thought leadership and repurposing and all that stuff, which sort of, you know, it's sort of strategy, but I'm not charging for it, mm-hmm. basically. So it's a full-blown website, but that means I have to go back in there with the developers and add like specific strategy stuff that we've been going through. Is it necessary right now to do that? Because that is going to take me away from getting this going.
I would just use a Google Doc. So like when I'm testing new offers, I don't put them on my website right away. Because like you said, it's really time consuming to like go and try to format the page and, oh, I guess I need some sort of graphic or visual right there. Or, you know, like, oh, I published the page and it looks like crap. And what did I do wrong with my formatting? And you're spending time wrangling WordPress or whatever your content management system is, rather than actually doing the work that gets you paid. So I'm like, I'll sometimes use Keynote, because I've already got like Keynote slide templates that are branded. So I can create a new Keynote deck pretty quickly. But I often just default back to a simple Google Doc with next to no formatting, very similar to what Ed showed with his. If you need to export the PDF, that's super easy. So I don't mean to sound lazy, but I spent years perfecting things, adding it to the website, only to quickly discover once I finally launched it, no one cared. So validate the offer by selling it first, and then you can add the design and marketing value later.
So I'm sure it'll change. And I have two websites that I'm dealing with. So I got to figure this out. I want to do it quick. I need to get clients instead of
ready, fire, aim.
Yeah.
Ready, fire. It will absolutely change. It will evolve. Mm-hmm. The worst thing you can do is spend. These things take what? 10x what you originally thought for all of us.
20x. Yeah.
So, you know, start testing it. Be aware when you're having conversations of potential opportunities. Like I told my coaching client, condition yourself to react differently to different requests and different conversations rather than, cool, yeah, what do you need me to write? That kind of approach. Condition yourself to react with better questions. And more questions and open-ended questions to dig deep. Austin's given you a bunch of those.
And even like at a practical level, and Ed, I know you brought this up before. Let's say you talk to a prospect and you know you want to sell them on, let's say, content strategy, but they called it content help, not content strategy. I would go to my Google Doc and just swap out content help for content strategy, create a custom version of that offer for them. And I don't need to sell them strategy. I need to sell them the thing that they asked for and are ready to pay for. And if it's already live on your website, now you're having to like get in there and be like, all right. And that's just painful, right? And so because not only do the offers evolve over time, but how you're going to sell an offer to a specific prospect may require a few, like 5 minutes worth of changes. I'm just a big, you know, I'm bullish on Google Docs rather than on like just trying to add untested offers to the website right away.
Yeah, I want to emphasize something. We're forcing you guys to come up with your first juicy offer, but that's really to push you. What happens 80% of the time is the first one you sell will either be a variation of that or something very different because you were put on the spot and you said, you know what? Time out. I think I can help you with something different. Let me give this some thought, get back to you tomorrow because you don't have to react on the spot. And then you construct something custom for them. That's 100%. Like, it's got some elements, right? Isn't that most of the time? That's what I've found so far, just from learning, you know, what you've taught, Austin. This breakthrough engagement has already evolved. It will continue to evolve. I have some other things. And if you spend all that time, you know, trying to get this page on your site with these strategy offers, you may never sell one of those exactly the way you have it. So don't waste the time. Go through the exercise. Yes, write your juicy offer. That's very important because it will help you move. And you, that's when you the real learning happens, when you have to apply it. But be open to the fact that that's not what it's going to look like, you know, probably ever.
So can I just add one more thing? This is a scenario. I want to see if I'm thinking about this correctly. I just had someone contact me through my website asking me about case studies because they really need customer success stories / case studies. I looked on their website. I couldn't find any of them. So I emailed them back and said I would be interested in talking with you more about your needs. So would this be a case where, and I don't know them, they contacted me. Could I come up with some sort of strategy session to get their case study scenario off the ground and then do their case studies? Like, could it be a case study strategy session to, you know, collect all the information that they need for a case study and then kind of like filter out clients that would be good fits, that sort of thing, kind of like a pre-program for case studies and then do the writing?
You know, I could see how that would work with some clients. I would probably just sell them the case study.
Oh, you
would. And I would sell it at a high price point. Like I sold one back in July and then I sold a couple more case studies last month, but they were around $3,000. And I sell them at that price point, knowing that I'm then going to put in that level of effort with pre-planning, right? Because I think sometimes when people get in touch, they really just want the thing that they asked for. And when I was first selling strategy and was just very gung-ho about it, I tried to sell strategy to some people who were like, I definitely see the need for that in the future, but right now I really just want a case study because we've got a trade show in 3 weeks and we just really need a really good case study that we can hand out at the trade show. So you kind of just have to decide whether, oh, this really is a situation where they need to pump the brakes, slow down, get some strategy, or you're like, no, actually the best way I can serve this client is just to give them exactly what they asked for. But maybe if this whole strategy workshop that we're doing together, if it does nothing else, maybe it just helps you raise your prices and have a stronger, more formal, more defined strategy phase for a lot of the writing projects that you've done in the past already, right? I, in the past, wouldn't necessarily have, you know, charged extra for interviews with the client's client, but that was so successful with the one I went, like they were thrilled with the case study. And I felt great about it too. Like I did work. I knew sometimes you wrap up a project, you're like, that was really good. I know that was really good. Right. And that was the case. So in that situation, I would just sell them a case study, give them a high price point. And if they, let me grab case study buddy. And if they sort of push back, they're like, we've never paid that much for case studies. Well, then I would just point them to Case Study Buddy. I'm like, oh yeah, like theirs start at $4,000. So if I'm coming in at $3,000, and that's still a price I feel great about, honestly. I normally don't use comparison to try to make my price more appealing, but to just point them to a website that's like, oh, like you think I'm expensive? Here's one that's even more so. But I hope that helps.
It does, yeah. And also, do you determine how many pages? Like some people just want like one page, and I don't think you can get much in a case study in like one page. The way I like to do it is like 2 to 3. I think it, you know, you get testimony, you get quotes, you get, you know, different things. But what I also normally do is I give them testimonials. Like the one I got 8 testimonials for them from the one case study. So it's like they're getting more than a case study from me.
And I think that's when, like, check out Case Study Buddy. They've done a really good job at even delineating between, like, is this going to be like a one-page project fact sheet, which is very much like a snapshot, or, and this is what I've sold recently, narrative, long-form, deep dive case studies between 1,000 and 1,500 words. I know I'm a good interviewer. I know that if I go interview their client, I'm going to be able to pull a lot more to the story out than my client would be able to pull out of their client. And then I really am just telling a story about the project rather than having the really sort of predictable and kind of dry, like problem, path, solution. There's nothing wrong with that, but at least come up with more creative subheaders, right? So, yeah, that's how I'd sell it.
Thank you. And then maybe later, like during that, well, I already did my own process on this. So I could come up with a strategy. Let's say if they liked it and they really needed a strategy, then you could introduce a strategy for case studies.
Yeah. And say, here's how I did it. Do you want me to teach people on your team? Like it could be part training too. Then there's no reason after you've done the long form that you can't sell them a new asset based on the same experience. Like, hey, this is a longer one. Do you want me to, I'll charge you this much extra now to do the one pager, or I'll charge you this much extra now to turn the long form case study into a sales deck.
Yeah.
Right. So you can sell them the same project a bunch of different times and they'll appreciate that because you've given them different assets that they will use in different sales scenarios.
That's the holy grail, high perceived value, low level of effort on your part, because it's easy for you. It would be really hard for them to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
You're welcome. And you may do this already, but now when I sell a case study, I've already got my standard operating procedure locked and loaded. So when I'm even asking my client, here are the questions I need you to answer about the project so that I have situational awareness when I go into the interview, I don't have to reinvent any of that now. It's all just all right there in a single document, copy, paste, even email templates, copy, paste. So it's fun when all that past effort to build out process starts to bump your effective hourly rate higher and higher and higher.
That's great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, we have time for maybe one more question. If anyone has not asked, I see Diane. Good to see you. I see you're able to make it. Hello. So yeah, if you have something, Diane, or if anybody else has something, we got time for another one. Just let us know in the chat that you got to just type in capital Q and maybe one sentence with your question and we'll bring you in. Yeah, I think, you know, while we're waiting, Austin, I just want to keep coming back to this because this took me a long time to really understand the idea that it's really about reconditioning your brain to approach conversations differently. Right. remember that little image, that little chart that I had with the different paths? I had to do that because I had to figure out where are the entry points, where are the potential opportunities. And that's, but it's taken me a long time to get to a point where somebody's asking for something and I don't default to, sure, give me the specs of what you need. And instead going down a path of asking better questions. And sometimes, like you said, we may realize, hey, you know what? I think they need more help, but it sounds like they are in desperate need of this deliverable. So let me just go ahead and give them that, but then maybe plant a seed, you know, for other things that we can do together, you know, once we get this out of the way. So just be easy on yourselves, because it's going to take, for everybody, it's going to take a little bit of time to think differently. All right, we got Charlotte. She says, any tips on modular offers and bundles? Hey, Charlotte.
Hi. So I really like this idea. I think it makes a lot of sense. I also have clients who want to invest in assets that are going to build their brand, or, you know, build out their messaging or their content that they know are going to serve them for the long term. And, you know, you described a scenario earlier where, you know, okay, you can't afford this, well, let's do this. And when you have more money, we'll do the next step. And I, you know, I think I've just been stuck trying to sell the big packages, and I really like this approach. And I'm just curious, like, Austin, you seem to have kind of a genius for thinking about how one offer leads to the next and, you know, when to turn them into a subscription. I'm just curious, you know, I'd love any more details that you can offer about how you conceptualize those, because that's what I'm working on now.
So what has helped me, and I've done this with some clients too, is think, if I, as my mom would say, if I had my druthers, if I had my way, and I got to work with a dream client for 12 months, and I got to lead them down the path, and I got to subject them to, force them to go through the exercises in the sequence. And, you know, like if I was the general and I'm like, they kind of have to do whatever I want, what would the roadmap be for 12 months, 12 entire months? What would I do? So like with brand development, I'm like, well, here's what I would start with. Here's the series of workshops, right? There's another client of mine. He's an e-commerce consultant focused on Shopify. And so like a lot of what he would do would be like, I need to get into all their sales data. And then a lot of the remedial work to just improve conversions and improve site performance, like that all just takes time. But you'd also want to put things in a certain order, knowing that if things come early, they're just going to have dramatically more benefit to the client. Certain things can come later. So like, what would the Charlotte roadmap be for like a year? And, you know, if you had to prioritize, you're like, this is essential, this would have to come first. Like for me, brand purpose, it's even more important than vision or mission, and then brand values, and then brand position with differentiators and with value propositions. Each product or service really needs its own value proposition, right? Because if you can give me that, that's enough so that we could get to web content. And then later on, we'll come back and think more strategically about brand experience and some of the other bits and pieces. So whatever your discipline is, or however you're wanting to sell strategy, you know, think in terms of what would the home run initial engagement be in order to really get a, you know, relationship started off right. And then what would you sell each month? My subscription offer with branding and with just basic strategy, all it is like ongoing problem solving, where they get access to my mind and to my reading and to everything else I've kind of picked up over 40 years of being a human, right? And so I've been delighted that people just need a thought partner. So if you think about what is a strategy subscription really, it's there are a lot of solopreneurs out there who are, they don't have a thought partner. They may have a partner or spouse who's sick and tired of talking about their business with them. And they're like, please go inflict your ideas on someone else, right? So I have been amazed at how much people are, how eager people are to pay for, like, I have a call coming up at 3:00. I have been his thought partner since 2016, and he pays me every single month. 6 years later, coming, like, almost 6.5, right? So that's what I would do. Ed's got a hard stop at 2:30. I'll keep going for a few more minutes to make sure that these questions are answered. Ed, can you make me a co-host?
Yeah, let me see. That's what I was going to try to do here. We got make co-host. All right. See, okay. If, did it show up on your end?
Yep, you are the co-host now.
All right, guys. We'll see you next Thursday. I got to run.
But really soon.